You're listening to the Ken on Food podcast. This is episode 14, or the one where I have been off to the National Ploughing Championships to find out how snails get down and dirty when it comes to mating. I kid you not. So this is Ken on Food, episode 14. I'm Ken McGuire, and this time out, we're going to hear from a couple of people. Rory Nolan from Anucht Restaurant drops into the studio to have a quick word about what's coming up with their Savour Kilkenny dining night at the end of October. I had a chance encounter with a lady carrying a crate of water on one of the hottest days of the year, and I couldn't let her go without having a quick word about their operation in Borrisalee. But to kick this podcast off, I chat with Ava Milka of Gaelic Escargot, based in Carlow. Ava and her partner are running Ireland's first snail farm and the country's only R&D centre for the production of escargot. Obviously the export market is a big one for this one. Of all the things that I have eaten over the years, snails are not on the list. I came close, I think, during Savour Kilkenny in 2018, but I kind of wussed out at the last minute, and I don't know, a Korean burrito caught my eye, I think that's where it went. But all of that said, I take the opportunity to quiz Ava on all things escargot, from production to harvest to cooking and what comes next for the company as well. Here's where the conversation started, live at the National Ploughing Championships for 2019.
Because we want to talk about snails. It's not all that often you get to do it on Drive, but the lady who is very much in the know from Carlow's Gaelic Escargot, I even rhymed it. I'm so sorry, that was such a bad kind of segue into things. Ava Milka, how are you?
Everything is good, how are you?
I'm good. You're here at the National Ploughing Championships. You've been here yesterday and today with Gaelic Escargot. Before we get into what it is that you're doing, and we'll talk about the farming side of it, how has your 2019 National Ploughing Championships experience been so far?
It's mad, but it's a good madness though. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
The only kind of madness that you can find at the ploughing.
I know, yeah. It's busy, yeah, yeah. It's warm, and the atmosphere is just amazing. Cool. Yeah.
Enjoying the day, enjoying the feedback, enjoying the reaction.
Oh yes, we're trying to encourage people to taste escargot for the first time and then see what they think. It's all about education rather than selling.
So when you say escargot to the people who have no idea what escargot are, other than it might sound foreign, we're talking snails.
Correct. We specialize in farming and distributing free-range Irish snails.
You say that like it's free range chickens or cattle that are roaming in the field. Explain to us what snail farming is.
So the full cycle takes 10 months. We start with the breeding in the end of December, beginning of January, and then we finish with the harvest now in September. Okay. So September is a busy time for us. And because there's no machinery out there for harvesting snails, they all have to be hand-picked.
Okay.
This is why it's so labor-intensive. So September is busy.
So where does snail farming take place? We're not talking fields. Are we talking like a greenhouse, a shed, an industrial setup? What is it?
No. They are free-range snails, so they grow outside in the field.
This is a total education for me. I know you're all about the education this time. So what size of a space are we talking about? What's their environment in that 10-month cycle?
So the first stage takes place indoor. This is the stage when the snails are mating and are laying eggs. Then we keep our baby snails in the polytunnel for 4 to 8 weeks. And from May until September, they're all outdoors in the field.
Okay. And consuming what?
Mainly forage rape. Okay. But we also feed them with a mixture of different oats and calcium for the shells to develop properly.
Okay. So you get to your harvest point, which is now, which is the most labour intensive time and the busy time for you guys. And then what happens once harvested? Where do they go? Where does Gaelic escargot end up?
So, in general, the three biggest markets in Europe are French, Italian and Spanish, the wholesale. But we started processing snails into 1 kilo jars for the food service. So it's exciting.
And what's the take up been like on the Irish side? It's obviously, I won't say it's obviously, I'm going to guess that it's tricky to convince people to eat snails.
Unfortunately, we don't have a history of eating escargot in Ireland. So for us, it's all about educating and breaking this psychological barrier we have in order to eat them, because it is delicacy in many European countries and outside Europe as well. But we still see snail as a pest in Ireland.
And that's the thing. I mean, you're raised as a child, and you're going, oh, it's disgusting. It's sticky. It's crawling. It's slimy. It's in its shell. It's like, you know, kick it off the step or get it out of the house. But you've got a tough task in your hands then to completely turn that view around.
Yeah, correct. But not many people know that snail meat is very high in protein, very low in fat, very low in calories, and it contains all these amino acids needed for the human body. But it's really lack of education. Yeah. It was never on our table.
So how do we change that?
That's a very good question. You tell me, Ken. Yeah.
Is it more conversation? Is it the marketing side of things? Do we need to convince restaurants to start putting them on menus, or how does it work?
No, it's all about educating the end user customer, because we get amazing feedback from chefs in Ireland. But even if chefs love your product, it's up to their customers to buy it. And if the customer base is not educated, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. So for us, when we go to food fairs and different events, it's all about educating and trying to break this barrier we have in our heads.
So what's been the biggest barrier? Like you've had yesterday, and you've had up to today. We're about 3:15, day two of the ploughing. For people that are coming in to see you in the In Carlo tent, what's their first question to you? What's their barrier?
What are these? But we have this trick, okay?
Okay.
So we cook them, we finish them on the pan with lots of garlic butter. So the smell in the Carlo tent is absolutely amazing, and this is what attracts people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about really encouraging people to taste them for the first time. Some people would be open to try different things, but some people, the barrier is just too strong.
Is it a kind of a close your eyes and pinch your nose and hope for the best?
We had few people like these. Yeah. Sometimes kids don't want to try,
sure.
But the parents would be more open, and sometimes it's the other way around.
Okay, fair enough. So on the business side of things for you then, what's the setup? It's you and who and how many?
My partner and I, we run a farm, just 10 minutes down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
So their labor-wise, it's like a roller coaster. First 4 months are labor intensive. This is with the time when the snails are mating and laying eggs. But then everything quietens down during the summer, when the snails are outdoors, we still have to feed them and water them in case it's too dry, but summer is quiet. But now the month of September, the harvest time is busy again. And once the harvest is over, there's absolutely nothing happening on the farm until the next season kicks in.
Okay, so what do you do to fill the time in between?
Going on holidays, spending money.
Man, there's some perks to the snail farming business. So when it comes to the snail farming side of things, and we had a little bit of a chat before 3:00 then as well, you are looking at, like, there's the education for the end consumer, but then there's the education for the farmer and for the producer as well. You're looking at emissions in comparison to beef farming and sheep farming, and how more maybe environmentally friendly the likes of snail farming is.
Absolutely. We love snail farming for many reasons. First of all, you don't require much land to farm sufficient amount of snails. 1 acre can produce 10 tons of snails.
In one harvest?
in one harvest, where just to give you an idea, the same acre produces just one cow. We love snail farming because it's a clean type of farming, so there's no problem with the CO2 emissions like with the cattle farming or sheep farming. We love snail farming because there are no heavy machineries involved, so it would be a perfect option for a female farmer. And demand is there, no doubt about that. Massive shortage on the international market, especially France, Italy and Spain. But it's still very new industry in Ireland, so we don't really get support from on R&D side. It's challenge, and it's farming in general, as you know, Ken, it's a way of life. It's not 9-to-5 job. So we often say to people that if they're looking to farm snails just for money and money only, it's not the business for them, because you really have to enjoy what you do, because you'll never be successful in the end.
Does the climate have much to do with it, or is the Irish climate more suited towards snail growing, would you think? Snail farming, excuse me.
This will sound horrible, actually, but the global warming, yep, is working in our favor in Ireland. Okay. Because we get warmer summers every year, and the snails are nocturnal animals. They eat at night, and they eat much better when the nights are warmer, so they grow faster. But the global warming is not working in favor for countries like Spain and Italy, where it's becoming too hot to farm snails. Like, we have ideal climate to farm snails, it's getting warmer and it's wet. Just look at your back garden, Ken, it's full of them.
That's true. Maybe I should just like open up a little patch of the garden as well. I wanted to ask you, Ava, because I know I've been talking with some of the people involved in the Buccaneer side of things, and they're there beside you in the In Carlow tent. So what's the relationship with you and Buccaneer? How are they working with and supporting Gaelic Escargot?
So we joined on Buccaneer program sometime last year, and they're amazing in establishing different networks for different businesses. So we just came back recently from the trip to Wales. We went to Swansea University, which was very interesting to see what we can learn from Welsh people. So the business, the support on the business side we are getting is just amazing, and you meet so many interesting people through the program as well. I think that it's all about networking. You know, people buy people, and people invest in people as well, and working together and collaborating together, that's the only way to go.
One last one for you. What does the future look like for Gaelic Escargot?
So phase one is to launch the 1 kilo jars to Dubai and Singapore. Phase two is look into snail caviar production, which, believe it or not, is one of the most expensive foods in the world. And phase three would be look into cosmetic and pharmaceutical industries, because as you possibly know, snail slime is being used in both. It's very good for healing, for wrinkles, it helps to regenerate the skin. So one step at a time.
I like it.
Yeah,
you got a plan.
Wish me luck, yeah.
Well, the very best of luck, and thanks a million for stopping by.
Thanks so much, Ken.
So that's Ava Milka, Gaelic Escargot, and you can read more about them on the farm at Garry Hill in Carlow online at gaelicescargot.com. Next up was a chance encounter with Global Hydrate, who have rebuilt a bottled water business from the ground up and under the Global Hydrate brand at Borrisalee Bottling. They're looking to go more environmental with the plastics. Here's Patrice Cooney with a quick word.
We are looking at brand new biodegradable bottles from Global Hydrate, Global, down the road in Borrisalee.
That's right, yeah, very global in fairness. Yeah, so we're just trying to promote our biodegradable bottle, which is coming on stream at the moment, and we're hoping that everyone will look for it and, you know, promote the environment and sustainability. So we're promoting recycle, but if it ends up in landfill or in the ditch or in the sea, that it will biodegrade in less than 4.5 to 5 years.
What would have been the kind of typical lifespan of a plastic bottle? Because we hear, I know, like, you know, everybody's talking about we got to cut the single use plastics. Yes. There's government initiatives coming in, they're getting rid of bottles, they're getting rid of forks, they're getting rid of straws. What would we have been looking at before, like 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, hundreds of years?
Hundreds of years, and in some cases thousands of years, depending on the environment that it's in, you know what I mean? So the thing about our biodegradable bottle is that it doesn't contaminate the recycle system in this country, so we're promoting recycle, as I say. But if it does does end up in landfill or someplace that is in a kind of an organic environment, it will biodegrade. Yeah, so it's just, and plus the water source from Bursley is A1, of course. It's from pure at source and a beautiful well, and we just love to promote it and to let them know there's an Irish offering out there that is sustainable, you know. And the schools particularly, we'd love them to get on board and just to see, because kids are all pro-environment now, and I think it's becoming huge awareness. And thank you, KCLR, for this opportunity.
Most welcome. Tell me, is there much of an operation? Is it just you? Have you a big team behind you?
We have over 20 employed in Bursley. It was a huge factory at one stage, and we all got redundancies and were let go, and the well was shut for almost a year. And then my husband and a few other investors and some other people decided it's a waste. This is a beautiful well. It had natural mineral water status with 7 gold medals at one point, and it's sitting there with nothing happening. So they formed a co-op of sorts, and all the employees are investors, and which is a rebirth really, as opposed to a startup. But it's a lovely story, and plus we have seen the niche in the market regarding, like, there's so many plastic bottles out there, and there's such a huge shift, as you know, from all the, and even Minister Bruton there the other day on the television announcing that straws and plastic knives and forks were all going to be gone. Yeah, so there's a big shift towards away from plastic. So we're hoping to be the first to take a little step in that direction, and we're hoping the other companies in the business will follow suit. Yeah, not before too long. We will have been in the market first though, because we're only starting off.
And lastly, Rory Nolan popped into the studio as part of the ongoing Ken on Food series on KCLR to share a quick word about their event at Savour Kilkenny this year.
In a first for the series, back once again in the hot seat on a warm, sunny day, Rory Nolan from Anocht. How are you, sir? How are things?
Good. How are you, Ken? How are you keeping?
I'm good. I'm good. Flying it. I don't know when it was. I'm starting to think it must be the bones of 2 months anyway since you were
I'd say so, yeah. Maybe a bit less, I think.
We were chatting with... how have things been since? You've had a busy time of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, good. It's the summer is absolutely crazy up there, so you've got busloads of tourists in every day. Yeah, summer is our busiest time. July, August, September will be the peak months.
You kind of forget that. It's like, as soon as you mention it, it's like, of course, all the buses line up outside the castle and the design centre. So
yeah,
there's got to be a nice little kind of flow from one into the other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've got the castle across the road, so that's a great flow of people coming in and out. And yeah, summer is crazy busy.
Nighttime doing well also?
Nighttime's doing really well, yeah. Really busy. Every so often you get new customers in and they're like, whoa, never seen this place before, and we'll come back. So that's always nice when you see that.
It's funny
building up a new customer base.
Yeah, like my first experience of doing a Anocht at night time was like, I can't believe I had a cup of coffee here in the morning. It's like it's the simple transitions, like the drapes come down and you partition off the back part of it towards the shop end.
Yeah,
and everything just looks different. It's the same but different.
Yeah, actually. It does. Yeah, it's people kind of can't get their head around it really. Yeah, the transformation from daytime to nighttime is they pull the drapes down and it's all to do with lighting and stuff like that, and it just looks like a really nice restaurant in the nighttime.
Have you had a day off since?
I've had a couple of days off, yeah. It's not too bad.
That's alright.
Not too bad, yeah.
That's alright, keeping things going. Reason we wanted to have a chat with you today is Savour Food Festival is coming up. Going through the website and seeing local restaurants, obviously enough, are going to be getting on board. A lot of people's experience of Savour is the market, and that's going to be taking over the parade. But dining events have become such a part of the calendar, and over the last couple of years you've been involved in it. You had a fancy kind of a vegan night last year.
The main thing of the food festival weekend is obviously the market in the middle, and that's the daytime, but each restaurant would say do a special themed night, maybe, for want of a better word. And each year we do, like last year we did a vegan night, so I mean, the chefs kind of come up with an idea of a team night, and they said vegan night. We kind of sounded a bit weird at start, but then once we started bouncing ideas off each other, we started to come up with the good ideas, and actually it went off really well in the end. We actually surprised ourselves.
Okay. You kind of do events around Tradfest and other things as well, don't you? You tie a bit of music in with
the restaurant. Yeah, we have a bit of music. We get Orla Fallon plays up there now and again. We're thinking of booking her in, I think, Christmas again. And yeah, we do events like that as well.
All right. You just kind of sell out type things?
Yeah, it's obviously limited space for stuff like that. So when it sells out. And usually does a couple of weeks before.
Good to know. So what's the plan? Have you something up your sleeve or collective sleeves for this October?
A couple of years ago when I started up in Anocht, we did a Spanish night, but I only had 24 hours notice to do it. Damn. It was a restaurant called the Salt Yard, closed down the week before.
Arroy is there.
So
there,
they kind of had everything in place, and 2 days before they asked me to do it, and I kind of was like, okay, no problem.
Well, I like that you said, like, no problem first, as opposed to going, how am I going to do this? No problem,
so we did it, and it was actually really good.
Yeah.
Well, we think so anyway. And I'd like to go back and kind
of... People are still talking about it.
Yeah, so I'd like to go... We'd like to go back and do that again.
Class, all right.
And give it kind of an Irish tapas. I know that sounds terrible, but...
No, I get it. So what would Irish tapas be? Or have you gotten that far in the planning?
Well, like, it's all... Like, I think, like, tapas food kind of translates itself well to Irish produce. Yeah, so you've got mussels, fish, prawns... black pudding, stuff like that. The Spanish all love that stuff as well. So we can do it in that kind of style as well.
Nice. Irish tapas. This is going to be over one of the nights anyway, over the October bank.
Yeah, we're not 100% sure of the night yet, but it'll be either Thursday, Friday or Saturday.
Sound like a slot in somewhere. And things in general for you then, you're saying they're going fairly well. Anything new or different on the menu, or things jumping out at you now that we move towards the autumn side of things?
Yeah, we're kind of moving to the end of the summer now, so we're getting from my organic guy, I'm getting a glut of tomatoes. He can't get rid of them now at the moment. So they've come to their peak. It's the same with all organic, the peak just in a week or two.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to pick them and maybe pickle them or something like that at this stage to make full good use out of them.
Are you doing much on the pickling or fermenting side of things? Or?
We do a small little bit. We wouldn't do like a whole year long pickle. We just like maybe a couple of days or something like that.
See what's there and what's happening.
Exactly, okay. Whatever comes in, we use it.
Good stuff. It's good to hear that things are taking along. I know we're going to be down with you guys in about 2 weeks, I think. We'll have a chat. We'll sit into the restaurant or sit into the food hall down below.
Brilliant.
And might try and coax you out then for a cup of coffee. You know, we're going to be locking a few people in a cabin.
Okay.
Across from your quote unquote office there next week as well. So we'll have a bit of a chat about that. For the minute, I suppose that's it. Quick chat and a quick hello to make sure that things are taken over.
Yeah,
and
we're still alive anyway.
Everything is flying. Rory, for people that are curious, the dinner service for you guys is still Thursday through Sunday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, open at 6 o'clock, and
Bank holiday Sunday nights. That's it. Cool, good stuff. Anuchtrestaurant.ie has the book and details. Thanks for dropping in.
Thanks, Ken.
We'll chat to you shortly.
And that's it for this week's podcast, and thanks to Rory and Patrice and Ava Milka for the chats. I do know that I'm going to be catching up with Rory before Savor to dig into the food provenance side of things and find out what's going on the menu in Anucht. But that's a conversation for another day. Next week I'm back on the restaurant trail for a Taste Kilkenny experience with Frank Kern, who runs Petronella Restaurant in the heart of Kilkenny City. If you've missed previous podcasts, then fear not, you can listen back on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and online at kenonfood.com as well. If it's your first time here, why not subscribe so you can get the latest episode as soon as it lands? The Savor Food Provenance series continues for another 8 episodes, and I know there's more between and after as well. When you're done listening and think to yourself that you'd like to share your food story or maybe tell a new audience about the food you're producing and why, I'd love to hear from you. You can drop me a line at any time. It's ken@kenonfood.com. And let's talk. Until next time, good luck.